This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. When Barack Obama held his first news conference as president-elect and was asked about the search for a dog for the next first family, he said the preference was for a shelter dog. In this portion of the program, we're going to hear some stories about the joys of adopting an animal from a shelter or rescue group. My guest is journalist Karen Winokur. She and photographer Judy Oleson have teamed up for a book with amazing stories and pictures that tell of the remarkable bonds between people and animals who find one another. They are true stories about rescued animals and the people who rescue them, although many of the people within the covers of this book feel their animal companions have rescued them. The book's title is Saved, Rescued Animals in the Lives They Transform. The people transformed come from all walks of life, rich and poor, young and old. As Karen Winokur notes in the book's introduction, a passion for animals opens us and opens doors. The author and photographer found themselves in a jail, in a hospice, nursing homes, a polo club, a dangerous ghetto, a private board meeting, and more than one riding facility for people with disabilities. Jane Goodall contributed the foreword to the book, the preface written by Temple Grandin. The publisher of Saved is DeCapo Press. Karen, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thank you, Celeste. I'm thrilled to be talking with you.
Why do we find such comfort, such healing in the bonds we make with animals?
Well, I can give you the off the top of my head sort of empirical answer, or I can give you the scientific answer. I think what I've heard from the people that we interviewed in these 28 chapters of the book is unconditional love is the refrain over and over again. They love us no matter what we look like or smell like or how we're dressed or how much money we make. They love us. It's the unconditional love we get from animals that helps forge that unbelievable bond.
Yeah, and the relationship is reciprocal.
It really is. If people take the time to spend with their animal and be attuned to the animal a little bit, they get so much more from it. They get humor and joy and a lesson in being in the moment, living in the moment, which I certainly have all my life with animals, and so have tens of millions of people.
Yeah, that's one of the themes I think that comes through in these stories, is that they help ground us, our animal companions.
They really do, and they're there for us in moments of great sorrow, and you may hear a cat in the background here because I work with my assistants here who comment on my work. They do help us in every portion of our life. So many people have told me when I went around the country with Judy to do these chapters how they can go and cry on their animals' shoulders, literally. In the case of horses or dogs or cats, they cuddle them and they pour out their sorrows to them or tell them their secrets. Animals are great confidants.
Yeah. Well, tell us now about a person and an animal. I'm thinking right now of B.J. Anderson and her dog, Libby, a dog, it seems, who was born to help.
Well, B.J. and Libby live in Oregon, and B.J.'s partner, Teresa, also is an animal lover, and they live on an exquisite piece of land up in the hills and have horses and dogs. And Libby, in particular, is a mixed-breed dog who helps BJ with her job at the Willamette Humane Society in Salem, Oregon, where she does temperament testing on dogs that are surrendered there or dropped off there to see if they'll make good adoptive animals, adoptive pets, and make them available to the public for, you know, new homes.
Yeah.
And BJ is an outdoors woman, as is Teresa, and this dog is just remarkably attuned to them. In fact, BJ calls Libby her, you know, her perfect animal soulmate. BJ and Libby and Teresa were at a resort once, and they were taking care of another mixed breed dog, and Libby literally saved the dog from drowning. The dog had fallen through the ice on a lake, it was winter, and was barking and hanging onto the ice by her front claws, and just about to get hypothermia. And this dog ran back and forth and back and forth till it got the human beings on shore to come and pay attention, and they went out and threw ropes and boards out and got the dog in and saved it. But sort of like Lassie back in the 50s or 60s, you have to pay attention when a dog is telling you something's in distress.
Yeah. What are you trying to tell me, girl?
Yeah, what are you trying to tell me, girl? And you just follow the dog, and she's trying to tell you, indeed.
Yeah. I am looking at a portrait of Libby that Judy Ellison made. And what a beautiful face. Tell us a little bit about the photography, because it's so much a part of the book.
Oh, I'm so glad you noticed. Judy is one of the best photographers in the country, and it's not just me saying this. She was named one of the best by Hasselblad Camera some years ago. The photos are both black and white and color. There's a big range of them. For each of the 28 chapters, there's at least one photo, sometimes two or three. She's able to capture the sort of electrifying emotions of every animal and or their people that we visited all across the country. If you look on the next page beyond the picture of Libby, there's a photo of a guy named Elton Akers and his dog Pee-wee. That one won an international photo award. Mm. That's taken in New Orleans, and it has a depth and soulfulness and presence and weight that only Judy can do. She knows how to use natural lighting. She works very hard on composition. We spent a lot of time visiting each of these places and these people. I mean, we stayed overnight. They fed us. We followed them around. We really got to know them. And because we were intimate with them, you can see that intimacy in Judy's wonderful, striking photos.
Yeah. Tell us Elton Akers' story.
Well, Elton was one of the people caught by Hurricane Katrina. He and his wife, Geneva, and their dog, Pee-wee, were sitting in their little bungalow, and the water was rising, and a boat came by and said, "Get in the boat." You know, the guy said, "Get in the boat." And Elton said, "I don't want to leave my dog." And the man said, "We can't take dogs." So Elton and Geneva got in the boat. They went to the convention center only because they were reassured it would be very, very short time. But two or three days later, they realized that their animal was in trouble. And Elton literally went into that terrible city, that destroyed city with the sewage and the trees and the power lines and the storm waters and the water up to his chest, and he walked 3 miles home to be with Pee-wee. A tree had smashed the roof off his house, and he sat there with his dog. He fed the dog, and he changed his clothes and fed himself a little bit, and he sat there until another, you know, helicopter came by and said, "You've got to go. You're going to die down there." And he said, "Not without my son." Because that's the relationship he has with Pee-wee. Pee-wee is his child and Geneva's child. They're that close, and it's a profound thing to walk through the Ninth Ward of New Orleans with them and see the scene where many people did leave their pets behind, and those pets died. But Elton's bond with Pee-wee was so strong, he couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's one of the painful yet important lessons of Katrina, is that people aren't going to leave their animals. And for the next time, you know, we're starting to think about this in terms of, you know, when you have to leave, you know, making arrangements, getting the animals out as well.
Absolutely. And we're better at it now, but at what cost? There's an estimate that some 70,000 companion animals died in that storm, were left behind and died. But this, I should say, saved is 28 stories that all have some gruesome or painful elements, but happy endings. And this is one of them. This is an animal bond with his human, and his human came back for him. So there is a happy ending to it for him.
Yeah. There are stories about animals other than dogs. Maybe you'd tell us about Lil Buck.
Lil Buck. Oh, that was a fun trip. I heard about Phil, the deer man, from a neighbor right here in Minnesota who lives across the street from me. And she said, "Oh, you're doing a book. Y'all got to go down and meet Phil. He got himself a stag." So we made arrangements, and we went down. We met Phil McIntyre. He had been given a two-day-old fawn. His mother had been killed on the road. He lives in a teeny tiny town called Bisco. And he and his Pomeranian dog, Prince, took in that fawn. And Phil was a deer hunter. This is the irony of it. And took the fawn into their home, where the walls are full of mounted trophies of dead deer. Together, they raised Lil Buck. They fed him and cared for him and slept in the same bed, all three of them together. And he absolutely loved that deer. And the deer will not, when we visit him, we saw it, the deer will not eat from anyone else's hands at all. The deer lives wild with some day-glow collars on his neck, but comes out of the woods when Phil calls him. And they have a very intimate, peaceful, sort of Tarzan-like relationship out in the woods there in South Carolina. And Phil had been going through some health problems and a divorce, and he was terribly depressed. And as he said to me, without him, I guess I'll be crazy. Mm. You know, the deer really preserved his sanity.
Mm. Another one of the stories that they are all great stories.
Thank you.
The first story in the book is about two dogs,
yes.
Chance and Hope,
and
a hospice, an adult foster care center in Minnesota, opened by Don and Darlene Ahlstrom. Tell us the story of Chance and Hope and the patients they care for.
Well, Chance and Hope are two great Pyrenees dogs, which are the big, big white sheep herding dogs, long white hair, big dark eyes. They look like seals. They're so beautiful. And they were found starving in a ditch, and someone had broken on each dog a back leg and left them to die in the ditch. They were rescued, and people contributed money to the University of Minnesota, which provided surgery for the dogs. And then there was a sort of interview process to find a good home for them. And Don and Darlene Ahlstrom, who run L'Amour et l'Abri, which is a long-term nursing care hospice home, one, and they have these dogs there all day, every day. These dogs have a job now. And there are five people living in the home, along with Don and Darlene and Chance and Hope. And Chance and Hope literally wake the people up every day, sit with them at lunch, cuddle with them, tuck them in at night, make their rounds, and they sit with them when they're dying. I think they know when they're dying. Darlene tells me that the dogs know, and they will spend time, extra time with the people when they're passing away, and they don't leave their sides. They give a lot of comfort and joy to the people in this situation.
Yeah. The message you hope people will take away from this book, you want to summarize for us?
Oh, boy. I would say that we need to cherish the animal-human bond. We need to take better care of our animals. Or as one of the people in one of these chapters said, we're responsible for what we have tamed. And they're dependent on us, and really we have a lot to gain from them. So we need to take better care of them. Give them a chance to love us as well.
Hmm. Karen Winokur, thank you very much for talking with me.
Thank you, Celeste.
Journalist Karen Winokur, she and photographer Judy Ollison have teamed up for a book with amazing stories and pictures that tell of the remarkable bonds between people and animals who find one another. The title, Saved, Rescued Animals and the Lives They Transform. The publisher, DiCapo.